Welcome to Rochester Speaks. I'm Pat Rivers. In this segment, we discuss addiction, drug addiction in particular, and the stigmas that surround addiction and recovery. And there's a summit taking place here in Rochester, Friday, May 20th, and it's a long one. The name, the University of Rochester Medicine Recovery Center of Excellence's National Rural Substance Use Disorder Health Equity and Stigma Summit. And my guest will be speaking at that event. And I forgot to ask how you pronounce your last name. Leonard Lee Bushell?
Yes, it is. Ah. You did it perfectly.
Leonard, you said
the name of the event also precisely.
Leonard is the author of a stunning memoir about his drug dealing days, years of cheating death, and his miraculous recovery from addiction. The book's title, High, Confessions of a Cannabis Addict. And he's also the man behind a film festival titled Real, spelled R-E-E-L, Recovery Film Festival, dedicated to showing films about addiction and alcoholism. Joining us via the telephone in California, Leonard Lee Bushell. Hello, Leonard.
Hello, Pat.
Thank you for
asking me to participate in this important...
Yes.
You have something wonderful happening in Rochester. I'm so proud and excited to have been invited to speak there.
Yeah.
My speaking segment is on May 20th at 8:30 in the morning.
Nice and early.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll talk about the summit here in just a bit, but first, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came about to where you are today, writing the memoir and all the things that led up to this.
Well, I did spend quite a long time. I smoked marijuana every single day for 26 years.
Wow.
And never even thought about giving it up, but I had a moment in my life where I was having a nervous breakdown, and I thought I was about to be arrested by the cops.
Mm.
And I thought, maybe if I'm in a rehab, the judge will look more kindly on me. And I decided to, for my own well-being, to sort of hide out at the Betty Ford Clinic for 28 days. And while I was there, something I can consider nothing less than miraculous happened. All desire for drugs left me. Even if I was only there for 2 days, I'd already thought of leaving because I felt it might have been some Christian Republican sort of cult.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, obviously, it wasn't. And I was blessed or graced with a moment where I lost my desire to use any drugs and to drink, because alcohol to me is a liquid drug, and I love to feel a little better by taking a substance, whether it's a pill or a drink. And then eventually I became a drug counselor. The Japanese have a saying, they say, at its extreme, everything turns to its opposite, based on, you know, night into day, spring into summer. And I think that's what happened to me. I've been high for 26 years. I got to a place where it had a healing vibration to it. You know, it wasn't what they told you there. It was the way it felt. You know, it was like opening a window to another world that looked better than the world I was in. Because once your head is filled with alcohol and drugs, you sort of think that's the only landscape that you're ever going to feel comfortable with. But that's not true. You know, my definition of addiction is telling yourself you're not going to take a substance or engage in a behavior even after you say you're not going to.
Right.
There was a time when I was doing cocaine. Remember cocaine back in the 80s?
Yes, I heard stories.
You've heard of it. You said it was in movies.
Yes.
And I did it every day for 13 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Literally every day. Well, you can afford to do that when you're a drug dealer.
Ah.
I did it every day, but I did it moderately. I didn't go crazy. I didn't blow my, you know, I didn't get my deviated septum degree ever, because I was moderate, but I was consistent. And in the 13th year, I would tell myself in the morning, I'm not going to get high until after dinner. But sure enough, after lunch, there I was chopping it up and snorting it after I told myself I was going to wait until after dinner, and now I'm doing it after lunch. For the first 12 years, and then I'll let you get in your next question. For the first 12 years, every time I did a line or a spoonful, I did it because I wanted to. But in that 13th year, I was doing it even though I didn't want to, and that scared me to death.
Wow. So what do you... Yeah, it's a very interesting story, Leonard. You've been through it. My goodness, if you're going to be a drug counselor, addiction counselor, you might as well have walked in the shoes of a drug addict, and you did. No question.
Yes, they would look at me, and my clients would look at me and say, you've never been a drug addict, because I sort of clean up nicely,
right,
they say. And I would tell them some stories that would blow, you know, curl their whiskers. And the book, Hi, Confessions of a Cannabis Addict, I started writing it 10 years ago, and I thought 2 years ago, I literally was working on it for 10 years. And when the pandemic hit, I thought, wow, if I can't finish this book during a shutdown, you know, then I'm never going to finish it.
Right.
You know, I used the plague as an opportunity to not be out of the house all the time, not be working all the time, not be out there all the time. And I got down to it, and I finished it and got it published at the end of November. And I'm thrilled with it. I'm proud of it. And I basically started to write it so my two sons would have a document to remember me by,
yeah,
or to really know me by. You know, and the reviews are in, and they thought it was stunning. Even though I don't hide who I am in it, but they accept me for who I am.
Yeah.
And I think anybody who likes a good, you know, rags to riches or stone to sober, you know, from a Philly boy to a, you know, and now I live in Los Angeles. It's really quite interesting. I must say so myself. And I want to tell anybody out there, if you want to feel your age, write a memoir.
That's true. That certainly puts things in perspective. Well, congratulations on your recovery. It's not an easy thing to do, and I have a lot of questions about that, because some people use drugs occasionally and they don't become addicted. You know, they say, you know, we did cocaine the other night, or we did marijuana, but they can stop. And there's those that can't. And I'm wondering what the mechanics were in your mind, that epiphany that occurred. You used the word struck sober. You know, and it was it magic, or was something else at work there?
I was blessed. It was really a blessing. And then there's the work of recovery, and yes, going to meetings and helping other addicts and alcoholics to recover. It's all that.
So you put work into it.
You know, it takes work, and it takes great, mainly gratitude that you've been given this opportunity to live your life in a completely different way, but it's still you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still you, but it's probably a better you.
Okay.
You know, it's you at your peak as a young man. And I don't want to say my father died when I was 3 weeks old, and I had a lot of, you know, almost I could feel it in my DNA, and my mother went crazy,
yeah,
when I was 3 weeks old. And you know, and there was a great loss. It was a tremendous trauma. And if anybody out there reads the great doctor from Vancouver, Canada, Gabor Maté, who wrote that best-selling book, In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts,
mm-hmm,
you know, he sort of says that a lot of people who become addicts and alcoholics had a childhood trauma that they are trying to medicate. And my pain of being a lonely child, no father, only a mother. I never knew, you know, without a father, you sort of miss. I can't even imagine what my two sons would be like if I wasn't in their life, meaning if I didn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
They would be completely different. It's complicated. Maybe it's genetic, but I don't think anybody in my family was a marijuana addict.
Right.
I did hear there were some compulsive gamblers, and I was a compulsive gambler.
Uh-huh.
In middle school.
Oh, my goodness.
I'd be outside at lunch in the schoolyard, and some friends would drive up and say, hey, we're going to the racetrack, Golden Gate Park, and, you know, across the river in New Jersey. And I would just walk out of the schoolyard and get in the car and go to the racetrack, because that sounded more interesting to me than the second half of school.
It was. It's exciting.
And being in action.
You seem like you were
distracted from normal life to something exciting.
Being distracted from normal life. I think you just summed it up right there. You're listening to Rochester Speaks. My guest is Leonard Lee Bushell, author of the book High, Confessions of a Cannabis Addict. Leonard will be speaking at the upcoming U of R Summit on Addiction and Recovery, which is May 20th, Friday, May 20th. Tell us a little bit about that summit, Leonard.
As you said in our original introduction, it's quite a few. They're trying to do something wonderful by inviting a number of highly regarded healers, which sounds too hippie-ish, doctors and authors. You could just read the list, and it's very impressive. And I think they're trying to figure out how to end the opiate crisis, which killed 100,000 people died last year from using drugs.
Oh, my goodness.
Is that silly, or is that, like,
well,
it makes sense to me.
Yes.
Because I know that when I was in junior college, when I was 20 years old, I couldn't get any hashish in Philadelphia. And hashish was like the drug of choice. And I couldn't find any in New York. So literally a friend and I dropped out of college, flew to Israel, where we knew they would have some red Lebanese hash there so we could stick it in our underwear and fly back to New York so we could get high.
Mm-hmm.
So people will do anything to get high, even risk their lives. The high from heroin and fentanyl must be so glorious. I fortunately have never stuck a needle in my arm with any kind of morphine or heroin in it. But the high must be so spectacular. People are willing to risk their lives. There was a study done years ago where they asked heavy smokers, you could die from this smoking habit.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you still keep smoking? And almost to a man and a woman, they all said the same thing. Oh, we don't think it'll happen to us. That's going to happen
exactly
to someone else. So I think everybody's sticking a needle in their arm today is thinking, no, it's not going to be me today. And there are 250 people a day who die from an injection and from an overdose. But they don't think it's going to be them today. So it's sort of worth the gamble. And I don't know how many people shot up today who didn't die,
yes,
who had that fabulous morphine, opiate, dilaudid high that they have obviously become addicted to.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to quote Lenny Bruce, I'm sure some people out there remember Lenny Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
His character is still alive on the TV show, The Amazing Mrs. Maisel. There's someone there who plays Lenny Bruce. He said whenever he got high, it felt like he was being kissed by God.
That's quite a graphic description of it, you know?
That's like, sounds special.
Well, it takes you out of the mundane aspects of life, you know? As you were mentioning there earlier, when you were a kid in school, the gambling offered excitement, and, you know, that's what drugs do, and that's could be part of the factor. So you mentioned this, the number of deaths with the opioid crisis, and it seems to have subsided in the media, or talk of it at least. Is it because it's not as bad as it was, or has attention moved on to other matters?
You know, part of my talk is called, where is the outrage? Where is the outrage? Like you said, if the media doesn't cover it, the media not covering it doesn't save lives.
Right.
Because people are still getting high. Maybe it's not. I'm sure if you looked at your paper, your local paper, once a week they have an obituary for someone who died of an overdose. I'm pretty sure they do.
Yes.
And, you know, and many times they started with prescription drugs, because it seems as though the United States was conspiring to get as many people addicted as possible through the overprescribing of painkillers, Percodan and Vicodin. You know, there's a great movie, let me just say this, called Behind the Orange Curtain. It's a documentary made about Orange County in California.
Oh, I've heard of it, yes.
How many young people were dying from overdoses, and what they found was that it wasn't the hippies at school, dying, and it wasn't the nerds who wanted to stay up all night and study on their Adderall, and it wasn't the punk rocker musicians. It was the athletes. It was the athletes, because inevitably, if you're playing high school sports, you're going to get injured. You're going to get an injury, and you get sent to a doctor, and he gives you a prescription for 30 of something, and you take a couple of those pills, and suddenly you have a feeling of euphoria. Yeah, it helps the pain go away, but it also gives you a euphoric feeling.
Yeah.
You want that euphoric feeling again because you haven't had it lately.
Yeah.
You know, sitting at home with your family having dinner when everybody's on their cell phone or their iPad. But here you are feeling euphoric, and then you tell the doctor, hey, you know, that pain doesn't go away, or I re-injured my ankle.
Yeah.
And you get another prescription, and then you're off to the races because the opiates will rewire your brain circuitry.
My goodness.
What you wouldn't do yesterday, you will now do today because your brain has been hijacked by the drug. That's going to be the topic of a lot of the summit. These people work on the front lines, and they know what the problem is. Why it has lost the favor of mainstream America. Look, there was a great Hulu series on called Dope Sick. And the book that series was based on, the author Beth Macy will be at this conference, and I can't wait to hear her speak. And there's another gentleman there speaking named Sam Quinones, who wrote a best-selling book called Dreamland, which you know, a New York Times bestseller. A lot of interesting people, a lot of people from government. Go find the website. It's called Taking Action, and it's in Rochester, you know, at the university. You can find it. I'm pretty sure it's open to the public. I doubt if they're charging to get in. It's there for 3 days. Come and listen, and when they ask questions from the audience, ask them, what is the solution? Why? Why are so many Americans letting killing themselves accidentally or maybe on purpose? Some people say 10% of the overdoses are really people who are trying to commit suicide.
Yeah, I've heard that, yes.
Because they're struggling with their addiction so bad, they'd rather be dead. So it's like a really, you know, ironic and contradictory situation when people love getting high so much, but then it causes more problems than it's worth. It's like the solution becomes the problem.
And you're going to talk about this and more at the summit coming up. It's just around the corner, Friday, May 20th, U of R Medicine Recovery Center of Excellence's National Rural, you use the word rural, meaning the countryside, Substance Use Disorder Health Equity and Stigma Summit. Now, is there a charge? Actually, it's going to be held at the Eastman School of Music. I need to mention that. 26 Gibbs Street, right in the city. Is there a website we can go to for more information?
It's Taking Action. And the website I'm currently looking at.
I see.
It's takingaction.com. I'm sorry. Take this down.
Yes.
Takingaction.v, as in victory, FAIRS.com. VFAIRS.com. And it's also online, but I say come in person.
Okay.
And hear it from some really interesting people. More interesting and more learned than I am.
Well, it sounds like you've been around. Sounds like you've had a very good. You have a quite an incredible story to tell.
Will you come by at some point there and meet some of the great speakers?
Well, I live right across the street from the Eastman School of Music, so I might be able to.
Okay, but can we just mention that High Confessions of a Cannabis Addict is available on Amazon 24 hours a day?
Yes, I was going to ask you that. Is that, how can we find this book?
That's it.
Oh, easy peasy.
You can order from any library or bookstore, but Amazon is the easiest, cheapest way. You know, you order from Amazon, if you're a member of Prime, they'll deliver the book within 12 to 15 minutes.
Ah, excellent. Technology is a wonderful thing. Okay, Leonard Lee Bushell, our guest today on Rochester Speaks. Thank you very much, Leonard, for taking the time to speak with us, and good luck on your trip here to Rochester from lovely California.
Okay, I appreciate it very much.
The National Rural Substance Use Disorder Health Equity and Stigma Summit takes place this Wednesday through Friday, May 18th through the 20th, at the Eastman School of Music. It's free and open to the public. If you'd like more information, visit their website, takingaction.vfairs.com. That's takingaction.vfairs.com.